Hello there. Welcome to Crystal Myth Podcast. We've been away for some time. Anyway, I'm going to drink a nice craft Italian cider. I've got one here. I'm just going to knock that back while we talk about unsolved murders.
Fenton, based on your previous comment.
Here's to all the victims of all unsolved murders and cold cases and such whatnot that Columbo hasn't fixed or solved yet. I don't know. Detective Dornan, what have you discovered?
To be honest, I've not discovered anything because it's an unsolved murder, but I've discovered information on that. I like that we're now just doing this. Well, I've discovered some information on the Hinter Kaifeck murders.
How dare you, Detective Murdoch? Why have you not solved this murder yet? It's been too long.
Don't want me to tell you about it. Well, I'll tell you about mine and you see if you can solve it.
Fuck off.
You might be able to. I've got all the clues.
Solve my own, I don't know, life. Never mind someone's. I can solve a crossword.
That should be one of those inspirational light up things, like live, laugh, love. I can solve my own life. Never mind your fucking death.
Oh dear, never.
Can we get t-shirts that say that?
Maybe we should start selling podcast merch, and that's what we should have on it.
100%. I'm writing it down. I'm like that on the top.
Say it again, Mark. What is
that? I can't solve my own life. Never mind.
You're fucking
unsolved. You're fucking dead.
$9.99. Don't actually have any merch, guys. I mean, it's not like we make any money off this podcast. We do it for the love, don't we?
Of the mystery. For the love of the mystery.
Myth. The love of the myth. Anyway, what myth of mystery day? What's behind screen number two, Mark? Imagine you have that, like, serial killer blind date. You know, there's three guys, but they're all... You've got, like, Bundy, you've got Berkowitz and Nelson for the gays. Or what is the other one?
We don't want Dahmer.
Dahmer? No, no Dahmer. Okay,
to be fair, I'm not Dahmer's type. He probably wouldn't try to make me into a zombie.
Who is Dahmer's type? Black guy?
Like, really slim mixed race guys.
Yeah. Well, you would have your...
They'd tell me I was disgusting. Which, to be fair, isn't as bad as having somebody drill a hole in your head. But I'd still be a bit upset about it.
Wouldn't it be interesting if you ended up picking Dahmer out of three of them based on their answers? Imagine, like, here's what you could have had. Ted Bundy.
Oh, God. Now, let's be honest, though.
I would go for Bundy. But
yeah, I'm not saying Ted Bundy's quite as hot as people make out, but realistically, especially Bundy. If I didn't know there were serial killers, if I was on blind date and they were like, here's what you could have won, a man with big brown eyes and messy brown hair, I'd be like, oh, no, I like him.
Berkowitz is a fucking freak. He looks horrible. The son of Sam guy. He's not. No. Ugh.
No, he's not anybody's type.
Richard Ramirez. I'll be like,
oh, good, I got off there. Although, again, if I didn't know he was a serial killer, I feel like he'd come round and I'd be like, he looks a bit like the guy that played Kramer in Jerry Springer, and he's an anti-Semite. Or no, wait, is he an anti-Semite? Is he Jewish?
Richard Ramirez.
He's racist. He's not an anti-Semite.
Fucked up teeth. If it wasn't for his fucked up teeth, I think he would be quite hot.
Yeah, he has some sort of Billy Idol thing, doesn't he? But yeah, not.
He's like a goth boy, you know, with the tussled hair. He's quite handsome, but he's got those devil eyes.
I feel like though, Dahmer again, probably.
No.
But he's like big and looks kind of Mormony, and
the glasses.
Also like he might work in a library, so that could work for me. But again, no, I know that he thinks that anyone that weighs anything is disgusting and tells them so. If Stella was like, and here's your match, love. And he was like, just leaned over to me and whispered, like, dirty fat pig in my ear. I'd be like, oh, okay.
That's you know, you definitely here. Wouldn't bang. You definitely wouldn't bang Gacy. Fat no. Large.
And clowny, you know how I feel about clowns.
Oh, yeah. Imagine he was dressed as a clown on blind date as well. Oh. Him and Ed Gein, no thank you. Or BTK, he's pretty ugly as well. Jesus.
Yeah.
Well then, after that strange conversation, what unsolved murder are we uncovering today, Detective Dornan?
Well, Detective Anderson.
Thank you.
Let me present to you the information that we've managed to gather on the Hinter Kaifeck murders.
Hinter Kaifeck?
The Hinter Kaifeck. It's a place, not a name.
It's a place, because I'm trying to figure out, is that someone's name? Kaifeck. Where's Hinter Kaifeck anyway?
Hinter Kaifeck is in Munich.
I was going to say Germany, but then I thought maybe it's somewhere like in America, you know, where the Germans settled.
Yeah.
For them, but I was actually quite surprised that you did say Germany there, because I was so like convinced you were going to say the USA.
No.
I guess Germany. That's where most murders happen.
I mean, they do like murdering people in the USA, but
yeah, it's getting a bit stabby in London though. Still,
there's a bit stabby everywhere nowadays. Bit stabby, bit shooty.
Guy,
well, I'm saying nowadays, the Hinter Kaifeck murders took place in 1922, so that's quite a wee while ago.
Still within our life, no, not within our lifetime. Within Reagan's lifetime. I don't know, 1922. Okay, it is over 100 years ago now. I don't know why my head went there.
No, I like that you're like still within our lifetimes, because we famously are 800 years old.
Oh, anyway, okay, so Germany, there was a lot of freaky guys in Germany around about that time, though. I mean,
there was. I'll tell you about several of them.
Okay, I mean, there was.
In fact, even the victims in the story are freaky guys. Everyone in their story is a freaky guy.
Did he all wear black polo necks?
Yes, they all wear black polo necks and they listen to Kraftwerk, but like only Kraftwerk, so that's a bit weird. Because they also. What about in 1922?
Whereabouts in Germany is this place?
The Hinter Kaifeck farm was in a rural area in Munich.
We do have listeners in Germany, so Guten Tag or Guten Abend, whatever.
Or Guten Nacht if you're listening to this and then going to sleep.
And I have spent quite a few hours on Google Maps looking at various prefectures, like, or areas of Germany. Then I look it up on Wikipedia about the city, and most of the time, because I know you shouldn't mention the war, but I have to, because most of the cities were bombed to shit out, like a lot of bombs fell on them, so a lot of it got destroyed. So there's not like a lot of historical places left that weren't rebuilt or destroyed in some way. So I don't know what happened to Munich, because I didn't really look at Munich on Google Maps. Sorry, guys.
I've been to Munich.
A farm in Munich. Have you been to Munich?
I've been to Munich and I've stayed in the rural outskirts of Munich. So for all I know, prior to looking this up, I could have stayed on the land of, I mean, probably not. I feel like somebody might have mentioned what I'm about to tell you has happened there. It's quite a big deal. But yeah, I've been to Munich and it was lovely. Right, I really liked it. Nobody murdered me either, which...
Well, I mean, obviously not, because otherwise who am I been talking to all this time? A fucking ghost?
Maybe.
To be fair, I haven't seen you in a while. I haven't physically seen you.
You haven't seen me and since I went to the Hinter Kaifeck farm.
Yeah, but even in your physical form, you could have still been a ghost for all I know.
I could have.
Yeah, because I've not seen you.
You didn't even put your hand inside my mouth. How do you know whether I'm alive or dead?
The traditional Anderson greeting.
Last time I saw Charlotte, she jammed her whole hand in my mouth. Thought it was quite rude that you didn't follow suit.
I mean, how could you not appreciate that?
Oh, I was very thankful.
Thank you. And I also popped some little chocolate minstrels in my mouth beforehand, just so you could get a nice wee treat at the same time.
Love a minstrel. The sweets. Not the reasons. Right.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you this story now because I'm talking absolute bitch. So we're on the Hinter Kaifeck farm. It's 1922. Mm-hmm. Who lives there, Leslie? Good question. In 1922, Germans? The family running the Hinter Kaifeck farm were the Grubbers.
That sounds like a really stereotypical name that you've just
It does, but it was what their name was.
Hans Gruber from fucking...
Yes, it was Alan Rickman, who also was alive in 1922. So there was the granddad, Andreas Hans. Gruber.
Did he have a son called Hans?
He didn't. Oh. He lived there with his wife, who has the best name ever. Kazdilla Gruber.
Kazdilla.
She's like a cat Godzilla.
Yeah.
And widowed mother Victoria, who was their daughter, but her husband was dead. He was not their son. So after her husband's death, Victoria had come back to run the farm with them. And then the even better named Kazilla Jr.
How's Kazilla spelled? Is it actually K-A-Z-I-L-L-A?
It's C-A-Z-I-L-L-A.
Oh, right. So hence the cat thing, right? Okay.
And Yosef, who was Victoria's 2-year-old son. So we've got quite a range of ages there, Leslie.
I'm just drinking some more cider.
And in 1922, they'd been joined by their new housekeeper, because they'd had many housekeepers over the year. They'd had housekeepers the entire time they ran the farm, and Cazilla was 72 by this point in time. So they hired a newer housekeeper in 1922. Her name was Maria Baumgarten.
Baumgarten. Like, yeah, that's like, I'm sure that's a beer. There was a place.
Yeah, I think there is a Baumgarten beer. And there's a, like, the Baumgarten, I'm sure, is like a famous...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of, probably. Yeah.
Maybe her family had something to do with it. I don't know, maybe. But she was 44.
When we get to the murders.
Shortly after Maria had gone to live with the family, strange things, or she reported to others that strange things had began to occur. 6 months before the crime that I'm going to get into soon, Maria's predecessor, Kretznes Reiger, had quit. Okay. Which is how Maria ended up getting the job. Now, when Maria had inquired with other local maids why Kretznes had quit and moved away, they claimed that she had quit because she believed the house to be haunted, because she was always hearing strange noises and mumbling voices in the attic.
Could it have been just a person living there?
It could have been just a person living there.
Was that a clue?
It may be a clue. Another clue... which Maria, when trying to work out what had gone on, so Maria was like, oh, that's quite odd. She herself hadn't heard any noises or anything like that. But when she was discussing it with the family, she found out that basically the family were not dismissive of Kretznes and understood why she'd moved away. Andreas had mentioned that around the time that she moved away, he'd actually found a newspaper from Munich on the property, and that it was dated just 2 days before he'd found it. But nobody in the local area had purchased the Munich newspaper. He and the family hadn't been into Munich in the past couple of days, and none of the neighbours knew anything about it. And apparently he'd asked the postman if he could put it in the house, which seemed very odd.
Couldn't have just blown away, would it have been blown there by the wind at some point? So maybe someone left it and it blew in?
But it was in the farmhouse.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. So they're saying nobody bought a paper and put it in the house that they knew of.
But right, there was a paper there that was just 2 days old, and it had come from the town, which would have been...
Right.
Basically, you had to drive into the town. You couldn't see any walk there. But it was on the outskirts of Munich. Only a few days before the murders that we're about to talk about that were unsolved took place, Andreas also discovered tracks in the fresh snow leading from the forest into the farm's machine room. So basically the farm was set up that they had like two big barns, the actual farmhouse, and then they had a separate little building from the farmhouse where they kept a lot of the machinery. And that the lock on the doors had been broken and the door had been broken down. He didn't find any footprints though, just tracks. And nobody had actually removed anything. He'd also contacted the local police officer just days before the murders happened to report that the spare key for the farm had gone missing. So basically all of the adults in this story had a key, and then there was a spare key that was kept hanging on a hook in the kitchen.
So do we think it... Right, my detective hat's on right now. I'm thinking it's maybe some sort of inside job, or someone who knows the family or who's been tailing them for a while has access to their house somehow. Did he let himself in with a key and then read the paper? But why would you leave such a blatant clue like that around to alert you to his presence?
Unless he was reading it and then fled. But like, it would be weird that you'd be like, oh, everyone's out, I'm just going to chill in their house and read the paper, and then they're back. One of the days as well, slightly before the murders, I think 2 days before the murders had happened, Maria, the housekeeper, was home alone, and she said she could hear somebody walking about in the attic.
Right. And so then, is that a parasite situation where this guy's just...
Possibly.
Right, okay.
So then Andreas had come home and she'd said to him, and he was like, oh, I can also hear somebody walking about in the attic. But then he'd gone up and...
Yeah, he was investigating. Okay.
Yeah, so he went up to investigate and they couldn't find anyone at all.
There must be a hidey hole somewhere up in the roof.
Now, in order to throw some more pertinent information on the case, the family themselves were bit odd.
In what way? Were they fucking each other?
That's right. So Maria had arrived at the farm on the 31st of March 1922. When she went there, her sister had escorted her there and like basically come to meet the family with her because she'd never actually met them before. She'd interviewed via letter.
Well, I mean, I suppose it's not like you had Skype back then. So how else are you supposed to... It's not like you can FaceTime people back
in the day. That's true. I suppose, yeah, you're not going to do a Skype interview, that's fair.
And maybe they didn't always have phones and they'd rather you spoke to them in person than over the phone because maybe phone calls are expensive and they might not have a lot of communications in rural areas anyway with phones.
True.
Back in the 20s.
Actually, yeah, that's a very fair point. And I suppose, to be fair, it makes sense that Maria brought her sister with her. Like, at least she's doing some sort of, like...
Yeah, security.
She's being the safest she can be. So her sister was the last person who knew Maria to see her alive because obviously she was planning to come back and visit her, but then everyone was murdered.
Everyone was murdered?
Well, no, not everyone was murdered, but Maria ends up dead. Spoiler.
Oh, spoiler. Okay, so there's one victim.
Maria's sister was happy to leave her at the house, but she did say that she'd picked up on... I've obviously not directly quoted this because I've put down. She said she picked up on a weird vibe. Which is not something that a woman in her late 50s in 1922 is saying.
Well, it would be like the 1920s equivalent of I'm catching weird vibes off of these weirdos.
Yeah, she was like,
yeah.
Ooh, frankly, they were all a bit ugly, surely. She's also an American flapper girl.
I find these people suspicious. Okay, no, bad German accent.
Unbeknown to her, but as Maria soon found out, Victoria, so the daughter, the widowed daughter, did go by Gruber, so it was quite a lot of people, although it was the Hinterkaifeck farm, called it the Gruber farm. Everyone who lived there called themselves the Grubers. But this wasn't actually her name, because again, she was a widow, so her real name, or her married name, was Victoria Gabriel.
Like
her late husband was Carol Gabriel. They had married, but he'd never returned from fighting in World War One. He was deployed in France and reported
missing
from his station in 1914. Although, obviously, there's lots of people reported missing from their station because they'd been killed in attacks. So
yeah, true. But if you... That could be interesting. Right, okay. I'm going to keep that in mind.
Are you picking up on what was odd here? And you might not be, so I'm going to repeat a couple of facts for you again.
Okay.
So we're in 1922.
Yes.
Kazella Jr. is 7.
Right.
Joseph is 2. Mm-hmm. And their dad went missing in France in 1914.
Oh, right, yeah. I see what you mean. There's a...
So, Carol has gone missing in France in 1914. Kazella Jr. was born in 1915. And Joseph was born in 1920.
Right, so who's the father of Joseph then?
So, when Maria had inquired about this in the house... it had been made politely clear to her that Carol was in fact both children's father.
Mm-mm.
She was quite confused by this. However, when she spoke to the other maids locally, they floated one possible explanation, which could be the fact that there was something that had led to Andreas and Casella Sr. having a massive falling out in 1922, which meant that even though they continued to live together, they weren't really on speaking terms. This is because Casella had discovered in 1922 that in 1907, her friend, who was a former maid who she was very close to, had quit and left. And Casella was always very confused by this because they got along so well. So she didn't know why this former maid had left. She considered her to be such a close friend. Wasn't until 1922 that she found out that the reason she fled the house and quit really suddenly was because she returned home one day to find Andrew and Victoria fucking in the kitchen.
Oh, no. Yeah, that would probably do it.
Now, Gisella had apparently spoken to a friend about this, and it was their maid that had passed the information on to Maria. And was shocked to find out, I don't know why I'm laughing, this is horrible for a woman, and was shocked to find out on reporting it to the friend that basically Casella's pal was like, so that doesn't really surprise me because, you know, and I'm going to make up a name for the neighbour because they don't give a second name for her. So we're going to call her Julie. So there's a neighbour that didn't speak to the family. So Casella's pal was like, so you know Julie hasn't spoken to any of you in over 10 years? And Casella's like, yeah. And she said, well, that was because in 1910, she'd actually stopped by the farm to ask you a favour, and she had gone out to the barn to see if you were there with the cows, and she found Andreas and Victoria fucking in the barn.
Those nutty Germans and their crazy sex lives. That's always like the impression I get of like Germans, or I don't know, not, I wouldn't, I don't mean to say like the entire German population, but I kind of do, is that they are very liberal when it comes to being naked and weird sexual stuff.
I mean, I think they're more sexually liberal, but I don't know if they're quite like having an affair with your dad liberal. It's also the fact that, like, when I was reading this at first, I was like, oh, so the dad's, now, I'm not saying the dad's not wrong in this, but I was like, oh, so the dad's a pedo. But then I checked her ages and I was like, no, wait, her and the dad started sleeping together when she was 23. So she was actually literally having a...
really good looking?
No.
Okay.
No is the answer to that.
That's an excuse for, you know, fucking...
Yeah, like you're like, but if you've got a hot dad, though, that's different, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like something people on farms would do, but I always had this fantasy of like working on a farm and living on a farm, but not shagging.
We're not fucking your family members on a farm. No,
but you know, like they always go on about how a farmer needs a wife and stuff. Like maybe the impression I get from that is that farmers find it difficult to find partners, so then they would have to resort to their own relatives. Oh god, country bumpkin. Like that time I was cycling around I was probably houses built on it now, but you know how like the where I live there used to be like a rural area past that old house, and I'd go cycling up there, and my tire got a puncture, and it was getting really dark and it was getting scary, and I swear to god, like I passed this farmhouse and there was a man, an actual live man, just sitting on a bucket with a fishing rod in the middle of the road wearing like a gnome's hat. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I had to pass him by on my bike, and I'm like, are these country people? Like, what the hell is this? Like, we're farmer dudes. Why is he just sat there with a fishing rod? There's no reason for it.
Maybe he was playing a weird sex game with his dad.
I'm just like, get the fuck away from me. Yeah, so that was scary times. I did not like being left like stuck with a puncture tire in the country, because you just don't know what's out there. There's creepy houses and there's dogs that bark at you, and there's men that sit on a bucket
pretending to be gnomes.
Pretending to be gnomes. I swear I wasn't hallucinating. I did see this guy. If I could have taken a photograph, but unfortunately they weren't like smartphones back then, so I couldn't do that. It's not like I randomly would take pictures of him anyway, for fear that he would lunge for me or something. So yeah, I mean, my impression of like country people that they are strange. I mean, you live in the country, don't you? They're not strange people there.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what I think?
Like farmers, it's all farmers that go to your school, isn't it?
I think it's easier to spot the strange people because there's because you're in a smaller community. So then it seems like you're like, oh, because if I imagine
like there's not a village idiot, they're all
yeah, there's probably like three proper like
village idiots,
not like actual what's wrong with you type people. Okay. That everyone would be able to point out and be like, yeah, they're disturbingly weird. But I bet there's way more than three where you are. It's just that there's so many people where you are that you wouldn't know them unless you actually know them. Whereas if you live in a small community, like in this story, if you were like, oh, like the fact that poor Gazelle is going house to house being like, there's this rumour flying around that my daughter's having an affair on her husband with my husband, her dad, and everyone's like, yeah, Sandra actually told me that. Oh. It's just like known because there's so few people.
Sorry, I'm chasing a moth about my room.
Have you left?
No, I'm still here. Right, okay, so when do we get to the murders?
Right now, but first I'll just tell you before we do that, just in case we think that Maria is talking pish to her sister about investigating the incest, it also turns out that when this information was passed to the police by Maria's sister, the police were already aware because basically their officer that was posted in the wee country area where they lived outside of Munich, had actually charged both Andreas and Victoria after he'd popped by the farm to ask them a question and had found them fucking on an entirely separate occasion.
I'm sorry, how many times have these guys been caught fucking? It's like that scene in The Fast Show where the neighbour looks across and sees, like, the guy walks out his house and his neighbours are just shagging in the bushes constantly. It's like they want to get caught, obviously.
I mean, yeah, maybe that's part of what is doing it for them. So they were both formally charged in 1915, which is the year that Casella Jr. was conceived. After the police officer caught them engaging in incest. Strangely, neither of them mentioned this to Casella. But fortunately, she had that fun day of going around the town and finding out of literally everyone that they were all fully aware of the incest.
That's so bad. It's like the hills.
Let's now switch back to scary murder story mode.
Okay.
After hilarious incest story mode. One evening in early winter 1922, Andreas, Casella, Victoria, and Casella Jr. were
fucking in the barn.
No, what might have been, but were killed. We're not entirely sure, because it's an unsolved murder, what happened, but we know from the police investigation that at some point in the evening, Casella Jr. had been lured out to the barn where her throat was slit, which is fucking horrific. We like the Casellas in this story.
All right.
Andreas and Victoria, not quite so much. Of, no. Police believe that after Casella had her throat slit, the killer had then presumably snuck into the house and entered the maid Maria's bedroom.
Right.
Smashed Maria's head in.
With what? Some blunt force instrument?
With a blunt instrument. We'll get to what they think the blunt instrument might be, but yeah.
I mean, it's a farm, there's loads of tools about. You could
crush her skull with a blunt instrument. And then, again, this is horrific, and then went into baby Joseph's room and beat him to death with the same weapon.
I mean, it would be easier to beat a little baby to death than, okay.
Based on the injuries that Maria and Joseph sustained, the police believed that this was carried out by a mattock. Now, I had to look up what a mattock was.
Is that
like a ball peen hammer?
Yeah.
So a mattock's basically like an absolutely massive ball peen hammer.
Wow.
Like if you think like Viking hammer, but if it was ball peen instead of mallet.
Okay, I think I've seen one of them in an antique store somewhere. But like, but the ball peen hammer was the Yorkshire Ripper's murder weapon of choice. He liked to hit prostitutes over the head with a ball peen hammer.
I mean, I feel hitting anyone over the head with a ball peen hammer.
Yeah, but not obviously that, like that one you're talking about is a little bigger, so would have been more effective, I suppose. But yeah, bludgeoning someone's head in. Okay.
It's weird that
It seems like more of something that you would have on a 1920s farm, that type of hammer, especially in Germany. Now you talk about it that way. Don't know what they're for though.
I assume it must have been for farm, because initially that's really weird that they lured Casella Jr. out to the barn, slit her throat, and then started killing everybody with this mattock. But
yeah, why did she get the special treatment? The special treatment. I mean, getting your throat slit is it probably a lot better than getting your head crazed by a ball peen hammer.
Killed her in a, not that there's a nice way to be horrifically murdered.
Nicer way than getting your head crushed.
Seems like a nicer way. But yeah. I'm wondering if maybe, rather than it being that they were showing preference to her, that because she was the first kill.
Mm. Or maybe it was unplanned. Maybe they didn't mean to kill her.
Bound the mattock in the barn, because they obviously moved it out to the barn.
Ah, right. Okay, I see what you mean. So he slashed her throat. I'm presuming. They slashed her throat. Then they went into the barn, found the giant ball peen hammer, and then bludgeoned the rest of the family? Or just one two?
Assume.
Okay, right. So what else did they find?
So they then led the remaining members of the family out to the barn. Now, time scale on this, they're not exactly sure what order they died in, but they knew that they'd been led out one by one.
Mm.
And had done the, so they led them out to the barn, Casella, Andreas and Victoria, one at a time and had again caved their heads in with the same mattock. Now, at this point, the killer or the killers then, which goes back to the weird, were they reading the newspaper, just chilling in the house thing. So they lived on the farm for a minimum of 3 days after the murders. They looked after and fed the cattle. They prepared themselves food in the kitchen, cleaned up after themselves.
And taken over the house. But that could only last for so long, because then people would be like, or Julie next door would be like, who the fuck are you? You know, or maybe she just stays away because she doesn't want to see them.
Yeah, she's
the insects like, in the park. Walking over there, my eyes. Okay, so then they vanish. There must be a fingerprints or something. What kind of fucking idiot detectives are these?
Well, okay, so there was a farmer who passed by the... This doesn't sound like I'm answering your question, but I promise.
Right, okay, okay.
This bounced towards an answer to your question. There was a farmer who passed by Hinterkaifeck Farm at 3 a.m. on the 1st of April. This is estimated to be around an hour after the final murder. It could even have been when the final murder was taking place, because, again, the timescale is hard to pin down exactly. He was then obviously interviewed. Well, he brought himself forward for interviewing and said, basically... The information that's been put out, I would have been there at roughly, at 3 a.m. So they asked him if he saw anybody, and he said, well, actually, he did think it was quite unusual, because heading past the farm at 3 a.m, which is a weird time to be wandering about in the countryside in 1922.
Yeah.
But anyway, he thought it was odd because it was 3 a.m. There was two figures that he didn't know sitting on the edge of the forest on the, Hinterkaifeck farm land. He said that he looked at them, and when they saw him, they both turned so that their backs were facing him, so they were facing into the forest, and then remained there stock still until after, he couldn't see them anymore.
That's quite spooky.
Which is very spooky, but I mean, my brain went the same way, where I'm which is almost ghostly, except that you know people that murdered people in a house, so that's why they were doing that. But weird. We also know that Michael Michael Plokel had also passed by the Hinterkaifeck farm. He was heading home towards his parents' farm because he had been out drinking with, and he stopped outside of Hinterkaifeck farm and stopped there. Doesn't say why he stopped there. I don't imagine he stopped for being a fag. And he saw that there was smoke coming out of the chimney, which he said that he thought was odd at the time because, again, it was 3 o'clock in the morning and the family wouldn't normally have their fireplace burning at that time. But also that the smell coming from the fireplace was disgusting.
Oh, so were they throwing the bodies on the fire?
Possibly. But no, because all the bodies were found intact.
In the barn?
Intact, but yeah.
Did they leave the bodies in the barn to be found?
So the maid was in her bed, the toddler was in his cot, and then the other four bodies were all in the barn.
I'm getting Peril vibes off of this. Have you seen that movie?
No, but I really want to, should I?
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. Definitely. So you'd love it.
A few moments later, while he was... So basically, he stopped and hung about post-pistol fag to work out what was going on, and he said a man came over to him with outstretched arms holding a lantern in one of his hands.
I don't know why I'm thinking Freddy Krueger here.
And he held the lantern in Michael's face.
Okay, so that
Michael couldn't see, and then made a strange noise, and then the man turned and sprinted back into the courtyard. Michael said at this point, understandably, he was very fearful as to what was going on and fled to his own home.
Yeah, and it's not like you can just call 911 or whatever it is. He probably just went to his bed or something. It's not like you can call the local police.
No.
And a guy shined a light in my face.
And he couldn't even say, not that saying to anybody would help, but he obviously couldn't really have said to anybody because his parents, I assume, would have been asleep.
Yeah, so.
And probably wouldn't want their weathered, 19-year-old son waking them up and going, there was a man with a light. All right.
And they're like, oh, son, just, you're full of the beer, you're talking shite, just get to your bed, son. Stop going out. What are you doing?
Stop going out and taking so much smack. So we know that the family were dead the bodies weren't discovered for at least 3, possibly more days.
And did this happen in winter or summer?
Right at the start of winter.
All right. Okay, so they probably wouldn't decompose as fast as they would in the summertime, so there wouldn't be much of a smell, maybe. I'm just thinking, because you'd think there would be a bit of a stink about the place. I don't know how long it takes for that to start, but yeah.
Yeah, there wouldn't have been like, which again makes the weird smell thing so strange, because it's like, well, they weren't burning the bodies, but you wouldn't have been able to smell the bodies yet either.
Okay, I wonder what they were burning in the burning clothes, maybe?
So on the day that the family's bodies were discovered, which police think was the fourth day after the murder, although again they can't pin it down exactly. So at 3:30 p.m. their closest neighbour, Lorenz Schlittenbauer, decided that he was going to send his sons, Johan, who was 16, and Josef, who was 9, up to Hinterkaifeck farm to see if they could make contact with the family, because nobody had seen them for several days. The return stating that they didn't see anyone there, so Lorenz headed up to the farm himself. Well, because Lorenz eventually contacted them. So when Lorenz went up to the farm, he... Because to be fair, the guy that saw the two guys didn't report it to the police, because he just saw two guys. And I get that, to be fair, the younger guy didn't report it to the police, but I suppose he was out, he was leathered, he was 19 when he woke up the next day. He was probably just like, that was fucking bizarre. Somebody held a flat, like a torch in my face, and I don't know why. I suppose it wouldn't necessarily make you think, oh, I better contact the police.
Yeah, not everybody likes to contact the police as well. Like, sometimes you don't want to get involved, lest you be the suspect.
So, when Lorenz arrived at the farm, he had a look around and discovered the bodies in the barn. Basically, he'd met like two friends who were walking home on the way up, who were other local farmers. They'd gone with Lorenz, and they said that on entering the barn, they found the first four bodies. Lorenz ran over and started trying to revive them all.
How can you revive someone whose head's crushed in?
Concentrating specifically on Casella Jr., which makes sense because she was the one that didn't have her head caved in. But he did, apparently tried to revive all four of them.
After being dead for 4 days.
When the men had managed to get him away from Casella and pointed out that there was no saving her, he then took a key out of his pocket and unlocked the front door, allowing everybody in to search the house.
Where'd he get the key?
A fine question. He then...
Suspicious.
So then one of the men ran to get the local police officer, who then contacted Inspector George Reigruber, who was one of the chief inspectors at the Munich police station. Mm-hmm. So... George and other police from the Munich police station arrived, but they struggled to solve anything. So they believed that the murder weapon was a mattock, as I'd said, but they were unable to locate a mattock anywhere, and have yet to locate one now, over 100 years later.
So they just concluded that they believe it was a mattock, because they believed from the injuries
that had been sustained that it was a mattock, but they never found one. They also themselves noted that they had the issue that not just Lorenz, but so many people before they were able to investigate had entered the crime scene and moved and interacted with the bodies. In fact, by the time that they investigated, every body had been moved by at least two members of the public.
All right. Okay. So contamination.
Yeah.
At the crime scene. Yeah.
Their initial conclusion was that it was a robbery gone wrong. But
was anything taken?
No, they found that all the family valuables were still in the home, and also there was large sums of money stored in the house, and none of it had been touched, and it was easy to find as well. Like, they found it after a very short investigation. They kept the investigation going until 1986. Yeah. Nobody has ever been arrested. They've never been able to establish a motive. Basically, there are some suspects who I'll run through in a minute. You've obviously highlighted who one of them is already.
Yeah,
so there are some suspects, but nobody's ever been arrested for it. So obviously, our first suspect, for the several reasons that you flagged up while we were talking about him, was Lorenz Schlittenbauer. Uh-huh. So Lorenz came under suspicion from locals, although was never arrested by the police, early in the investigation, because of the fact that he immediately ran and touched four of the six bodies. It was also pointed out that missing key had been reported to the police, and that Lorenz had a key in his pocket that let him into the front door.
Yeah, that's what basically raised my hackles immediately. Like, okay, why have you got a key to their house and there was one missing? So that's a clue. And the fact that he's trying to resuscitate clearly dead people that have been dead for like 4 days.
Yes.
As you say. which doesn't seem like normal behavior to me. Sounds like someone who's trying to...
Now, there might be a possible explanation for his irrational behavior.
Okay.
So when he tried to enter the house after unlocking the door, one of his friends tried to restrain him and said to one of the other local farmers and said to Lorenz that the three of them couldn't go in. They had to wait for the police to come. And Lorenz apparently pushed him out the way and said, "Leave me alone. I must look for my son."
His son?
Now, this obviously made no sense whatsoever, given that he'd already sent his sons up to Hinter Kaifek, and they'd returned to tell Lorenz that they couldn't see anything.
Mm.
And Lorenz had then left his two sons at his house before going to Kinter Hafek, and had said to the two men that he'd bumped into that he'd sent his sons to look and they'd return to the house. So everyone was fully aware that both of his sons were at home.
Unless he wasn't talking about those sons.
Go on.
Maybe he had a son with Victoria?
You and George Reingruber are the same man separated.
Yeah! Because she was a massive whore.
George Reinberger had obviously picked up on what we've already discussed, like, well, actually Victoria has children that were born after her husband apparently died. This doesn't really make any sense. He questioned Lorenz as to whether or not he thought his son was in the house because his son was perhaps a victim, to which Lorenz said yes, he was looking for his son Josef.
Oh.
In his official police statement, which again he was not arrested after, Lorenz explained to Inspector George Reingruber that he had started having a romantic relationship with Victoria shortly after the death of his own wife in 1918. He believed himself to be Josef's father. He said Victoria gave birth to Josef on September the 7th, 1919, and had initially put Lorenz on the paperwork for what was the equivalent of a birth certificate back then.
But could that be to cover up the fact that Josef is actually her own brother by her dad?
Well,
this is like the Maury Povich show. We need to get Maury Povich in, who is the father of Josef.
Lorenz had then found out that Victoria had actually registered the father as Carol Gabriel, who is her husband, who had been dead for a prolonged period.
Yeah, that's absurd.
He then heard the whisperings of neighbours and found out that it was definitely true, and was then basically, he then didn't know whether young Josef was actually his child or was the child of Andreas, his own grandfather.
Oh, fucking hell.
When he confronted Victoria about this, she confided in him that yes, she and Andreas had been having an incestuous relationship behind the back of her husband, but that since her and Lorenz had got together, she had called this off. She was shockingly far more interested in attractive local farmer Lorenz than her own dad.
Someone that doesn't share her own DNA. Yeah, okay. Now, did her dad get jealous?
The reason that Victor Reingruber was able to then say that he believed Lorenzi's story entirely is because he was able to confirm Lorenzi's story, because Lorenz let him know that he had actually reported. So basically he'd cut off ties to an extent with Victoria at that point.
Right, and that would explain why he had a key to the house. Because
yes, so she'd apparently given him the key. But he had reported Victoria and her father to the police on the 10th of September 1919. And Andreas had been taken in by the police. On Andreas being taken in by the police, Victoria had gone to speak to Lorenz and had urged him to withdraw his statement. He then went to the police station and withdrew his statement. But obviously, Inspector Reingruber was able to check this and confirm that yeah, he had actually put this statement in. And as you say, Lorenz said, and this is why he had the key for the house, because when Victoria and him were seeing each other, she'd given him a key for the house.
Okay.
He had said that him and Victoria had eventually got back together. He and Andreas had ended up having a huge physical fight because Andreas had confronted him on his farm and told him that he would not be allowed to marry Victoria. She was his, which is terrifying. This was backed up by another neighbour.
It's like a Josef Fritzl situation.
It is, isn't it?
Oh, right. Also, it's not... Let's throw back a bit. The noises in the attic and stuff, like, oh, it's haunted and stuff. Like, but is there a connection there?
Possibly.
So where...
Okay, so there's, so are we, are you in agreement with me that although he was prime suspect, Loren's not the killer?
Yeah, I don't think he's the killer, but it sounds to me like there's more than one, because A, you said that there was a guy who witnessed two people sitting in the farm, so there must have been more than one person involved.
Okay, so we've got some other suspects that might explain the noises in the attic and so on.
Right, okay, go ahead. I don't think you're going to have time for my stream.
That's, we can do this as a two-parter.
We're going to have to.
Okay, so we've got the Gumps.
The Gumps.
Are our next suspects.
Well, so, as in like Forrest Gump.
As in Forrest Gump and his mum.
Baba Gump. Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So in 1951, Chris...
51?
Yep, we're jumping forwards in time here. Because again, that was at that point in time, all the police had was Lorenz. They had their interview with Lorenz and they were like, it's not Lorenz.
Right, and then they just
And then they
up.
Had no further suspects until 1951.
Came, I suppose, when, I mean, there was the Nazis in World War II.
That's true, because they were busy.
Distracted. Yeah. Okay. So they didn't have time to investigate until after.
Crescentia, Mayor.
Crescentia.
Mm-hmm. Claimed on her deathbed.
A deathbed confession.
No, hold on, I'm saying this the wrong way around. In 1951, Crescentia Mayor. Well, I've lost the ability to read. In 1938.
Okay, we're going back again, pre-war.
I'm getting confused because it's so 1951 is when the police looked into this claim, but the claim was originally made in 1938. So in 1938, Crescentia Mayor at her father's funeral had discussed with several visiting people that she believed that her brothers, the Gumps, were the Hinterkaifeck Farm killers. And should not be trusted by anyone. She told several people that she knew for a fact that her brothers Adolf Gump and Anton Gump.
I mean, that right there, he's called Adolf.
Adolf, yeah, that's suspicious.
End of fucking story. Adolf
had committed the murders, and this bit will blow your mind, Leslie, because you've not heard me say this three times in a row. And then in 1951, on her deathbed, Crescentia. Requested the police come to her home, and on arriving at her home, she informed them that although she had told people in the past she'd done the wrong thing, she had not gone to the police, but she knew that Adolf Gump and Anton Gump were the Hinterkaifeck Farm killers.
And that's two people, so that matches with what the witness saw.
So she died later that day, but public prosecutor Andreas Popp decided that he was going to investigate the Gumps, which makes it all seem like a children's story. Mr. Pop went after the Gumps. Through his investigations, Pop had no doubt whatsoever that Victoria had been having
an affair. Banging. How many fucking men has she banged? Like a town bike? Yeah. And her dad and everyone? Yeah. Okay.
So not only had Victoria been shagging Adolf Gump, but she had been shagging him shortly before she fell pregnant with Joseph. And guess who she told?
This really is like a Jerry Springer show. Right, I actually think that her husband knew she was a massive whore and decided to just go missing, inverted commas, in France and probably find some Dolly Bird there. I don't think he died. I think he just...
You won't. Are Inspector Ryan Gruber reborn, because wait till we get to George's other theory.
Oh my God.
Okay, so Victoria had told Adolf that he was Joseph's father. Adolf had then shown up at the farm to basically say that he wanted to be involved in his son's life, but on visiting the town and speaking to locals had heard the gossip that Victoria was in fact A, a mad slag, and B, shagging her da. He had gone there with the intention of asking Victoria to marry him, but was horrified to find out that she had been and was apparently continuing to shag her da. He went up to the farm to explain why he was there, but said that he would not marry her, that she and her father were disgusting, and that he would have his revenge on them.
Wait, but why would you murder your own child in case maybe he thought that it wasn't his kid, it was, you know, her incestuous child? So unless it didn't matter, he was just in a fit of rage.
So it was later that day that, and it wasn't, it was later the next day, that Adolf had gone to his family home rather than his own home, and his younger sister, Crescentia, was there. and said that he was storming around the house, being violently angry and screaming about the woman he loved having an incestuous relationship.
Like, everybody in town already knows this, it seems so.
He like didn't live in town, though.
Knew. Right, he didn't live in town, but then you'd think they would be like, oh, well, we already knew that, so tell us something we don't know, son.
Yeah, Presentina was like, well, yeah, everybody knows that she shags her dad. It's the talk of the whole of Germany. Now, another reason that Pop believed that the Gumps were the killers is because Adolf was an artisan by trade, known for creating his Gump baskets, which he travelled up and down the country to sell, which is how he'd actually met Victoria.
Gump baskets. This is getting more and more ridiculous, Mark. I can't believe where'd you find this story. This is so fun. Right, now, okay.
On record from several neighbours that when asked who the father of the baby was, obviously implying it was Andreas, to Andreas, people were like, everybody knows you're shagging your daughter, you're weirdo. Andreas was said to comment many times that at the time, very strange comment, but would tie in if Adolf was the father. I would prefer anyone to be the father of this, of my daughter's unborn child, than a dirty basket maker.
Ooh, okay.
Now, again, obviously the neighbours were like, right, we know he's an absolute weirdo, but that's a pretty bizarre thing. Like, why are you going, like, as long as it's not a basket maker? But unbeknown to them, she was shagging a basket maker. And again, like, famous for his baskets, so... does make sense, yeah. That's what he was saying.
I mean, it's not exactly a cryptic clue, was it? He's basically telling everyone. Right, okay, but not everyone knows this guy, so he's a stranger, like he's an out-of-towner.
No,
he's not.
No,
he's from the town.
Sorry. No, nobody
I'm
knows
confused
him, because
now.
Yes, he is an out-of-towner.
Yeah, but then where did he meet Victoria?
He met Victoria when he was plying his basket
Selling his baskets, wow.
Which again would make sense if, like, Andreas put it in context and went like, do you remember that man that sold the baskets? People would be like, oh yeah, the famous baskets. But obviously because it was like, like, let's say it was 4 months later she'd started showing, if there'd been a guy come to your door, like, right, in January, and being like, do you want to buy a basket? And you were like, no, thank you. And then in, like, the end of April... you were like, oh, I see your daughter's pregnant, and somebody went, I hope it's not a dirty fucking basket maker. You'd be like, okay. Mentally noted with the oddness, but cool. Pop also spoke to Adolf and Crescentina's younger sister, Florentine, and she was quoted as saying to the police that she did not believe that.
She didn't think it was him that did it.
No. She said she did not believe her family would be guilty of crime, but what she would say is that Crescentina was a very strange person.
Oh, for God's sake.
If I was to be frank, I would say that she always had something to criticise about us, all of her brothers and sisters, especially Adolf. And at Father's funeral, I noticed that my dear sister Crescentina didn't even buy a flower for Father. And after the funeral, Crescentina left us. She left us siblings. She left all the relatives. But now
were
that you have
banging?
Interviewed me, say that again.
Were they all banging each other?
No,
like,
I think
this whole fucking
just a bit weird.
She was okay. Like,
but now that you interview me, I do remember that my other brother Anton and my sister Crescentina had a collision at the funeral. But my sister Crescentina, she had such hatred for every one of us siblings, and especially against Anton, and especially against Adolf. I just do not know. But no, I don't think that Adolf would be a killer. Which tells us nothing, but I just enjoyed that quote because it's weird.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. Like, so they're saying that she's like the black sheep of the family, and that she's
that
a
she
weird
just
one,
makes shit
and
up about
just
people.
She just makes shit. She's just a fucking liar, basically. And resents them, so fit them up for murder for attention.
But I think right, that Florentine's okay. Talking pish, because I'm like, nah, okay. Like Crescentina's evidence has been looked into and it seems relatively convincing.
Out. But why would he want to murder his own son? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, true.
Unless he thinks that it's not his son and she's trying to claim child support from him or something. He doesn't want to be it.
Inspector George Reingruber was... So basically, we're now at the point where we've got... So Andreas Pop... Andreas Pop is like, 100% we need to reopen the case because it's Adolf and clearly this is why Anton and Crescentina were having the fight. So it's Adolf and Anton Goober. They were the two men, not Goober, Gump.
Goober, Gump.
They were the two men outside Goober. The farm. They're the murderers. They have motive. However, Inspector George Reingruber came up with an alternative idea, which he started to look into, which you also came up with, that it was the ghost of Carol Gabriel. Woo!
He's not dead.
So Inspector Reingruber started to look into Carol Gabriel's death and found out that despite being killed 8 years prior to the murders in France during World War One, supposedly, there was never a body recovered. He began to speculate that perhaps he'd never died.
Yeah.
He thought that Carol had not, in fact, died.
That's what I thought from the start.
And that he had returned to Hinterkaifeck Farm.
Found his wife fucking her dad and the basket maker, flipped his lid.
And the neighbour.
The neighbour decided to what was we fighting for this? And then killed them all. Because those aren't his kids, obviously. I believe that. And that would explain why they were staying in the farm for a while, because technically it is his home and his farm.
Yes. So he was like hiding somewhere in the loft and being like, I'm going to get my revenge.
Yeah, because he knew where to go.
And then, yeah, kept looking after the farm, and then eventually he was like, actually, I probably should run away. So Reingruber's theory was supported by another police inspector who was the chief of police in Strobenhausen, Chief Inspector Meixel. And the reason that it was supported by him is because he was the person that was in charge of gathering information about the release of war captives, because they were released into the Strobenhausen region. He said at the end of World War II, there was captives released prematurely from Soviet captivity, and the war captives claimed that they had been sent home by a German-speaking Soviet officer who exactly matched Carol Gabriel's description. It was believed by people in the town of Strobenhausen that Carol Gabriel had in fact just defected to being a Soviet soldier during World War One. Also, several neighbours in around crazy. The Hinter, so several neighbours around Hinterkaifeck Farm, and several people living in Strobenhausen had actually reported seeing Carol multiple times after his death.
Okay, this is fucked up.
In one specific incident, Carol Graeber was not reported to have been seen, but just people were like, oh yeah, Carol was definitely in Hinterkaifeck in 1918. Yeah. Remember that you're supposed to be dead in 1950.
Yeah, but then
1914.
Yeah. And then someone said, oh, this place is haunted, I don't like it, I'm getting out of here. Maybe she's seen him, his ghostly. But he wasn't a ghost, he was just some fucking, he was just hanging about the attic again, parasite style. Then if he defected to the Soviet army, that doesn't make sense either. What is he doing there?
But then if he defected to the Soviet army, but then it was the end of the war, then he would be able to pass back into Germany between World War One and World War Two, because it was, and even actually Munich would have been,
I just assumed he went back to Russia.
So even after World War Two, he would still have been able to
took over.
So actually, he would have been able to travel between. And again, between it wasn't until the investigation started, but yeah, there were. Or in fact, it wasn't even really. It wasn't until the later investigations of Inspector Reingruber that multiple neighbours were like, oh yeah, people saw Carol all the time. And like Carol stayed for several weeks in 1918. And
oh, yeah, that could have been information he could have told us back when the investigation was fucking starting in the 20s. Why did they
I liked that everyone was like, oh, do you know who has a key? And reported that poor guy to the police and not. Although strangely, you know, her husband that's apparently dead, saw him the other day.
It's like I saw Hitler wandering around in the streets of Buenos Aires in the 60s.
But Inspector Reingruber was never able to track Carol Gabriel down.
He's probably dead.
I believe that he might have changed his name when he defected, so they don't even know what he's called now. Basically, he's never been tracked down. There was never enough evidence gathered to formally charge the Gump brothers, so that's it.
I don't think it's the Gump brothers. I genuinely think it's the ex-husband that disappeared during the war. He might, because he's got experience in the military as well, so he could definitely train to kill, or he's killed people. So it wouldn't be far-fetched for him to go back and kill a bunch of people at that farm.
And the children definitely, well, I say they definitely aren't his. If he was travelling back and forward at the time,
no, they're not his.
They could be his, but it seems highly unlikely that they're his.
It's kind of like a lion coming in and killing the other competitor's cubs. That sounds like what it's like to me. Like, he went back there in a rage thinking this should have all been mine. I went away to fight for my country and then come back to fight.
And then come back and you're shagging a basket weaver, the next door neighbour, and your dad.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He probably lost his shit after, like, hiding, and he probably had about the... But then, if he was hiding and trying to sneak about and people saw him, he couldn't have been that great. I mean, you'd think someone would say, oh, there he is. Or do you think they would just think, oh, that kind of looks like him, but why would they not say, hey, why are you back here?
That's the thing. It didn't seem like when the... Inspector... Reingruber. It didn't seem like when he started looking into it that the neighbors were like, oh, some people think they've seen him. They were just like pure, oh, I know, like, everybody saw Carol all the time, like, he was always coming back to visit the town.
But that's what I don't understand. Like, maybe the whole town was in on it and they just wanted rid of this fucking incestuous family because they were a pain in the arse, so they sort of turned a blind eye to the actual who the killer was and were quite glad that they were gone. I wonder who took over the farm then after they died. I want to know that.
It's a fine question.
Because obviously he's wiped some whole old amount, unless we've got some cousins somewhere, some mutated, fucked up, sloth-like relative that moves in.
I suppose that's the thing as well, like, if it was his... And then if you think, if it was Carol, who else was he with? Like, maybe he did have cousins and was like, they've reported me dead and taken my farm, and they're weird buns of, like... Those have eyes, freaks.
Yeah. Because it doesn't explain, like, the witness who said he saw two people sitting in the farm after the murders took place, or during. And you said you implied that it was more than one person who murdered them or stayed in the farm, not just one guy, but, like, several people.
But, like, you're saying if it would have gone to his, like, cousins or something, maybe he convinced a cousin or someone to come with him.
I think maybe he did. Or recruit some army buddies or somebody. He definitely had help. I don't think he definitely didn't do it on his own. Or he had someone hide in the attic, scoping them out. Definitely an inside job there.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really weird.
There's just so many elements to it. It's such a
And
good
the sad thing is about these, like the ones I read about, which we're probably going to have to talk about next week, and the Australian unsolved murders, is that the further back, obviously the further back in time you go, the harder it will be to solve these murders. A prime example would be Jack the Ripper, because so much time has passed now that there's no possible fucking way that you'd be able to solve that.
No.
Because there's no witnesses anymore and all the evidence is gone and there's just absolutely no way that you can prove who the person was that did it. As time goes on, these unsolved murders will remain unsolved. I think it's more likely that modern times easier to solve murders now because of the technology and how DNA evidence and better forensics, but again, there has still quite a lot of cold cases recently, or you hear people who've been in jail for like rape or murder and then it turns out it was never them because eventually they found forensic evidence that proved that it wasn't them. Things like that happen all the time, but I guess we're like, for, you know, for murders that take place so far away, like back in the past like that, the longer it goes on, the less likely you're ever going to know. Like
forensic evidence, because let's say that it was Carol, but it happened now. But then,
so messy.
Like, Gump brothers were arrested because they had actually been on the farm and that he had actually threatened to kill her. They and then, like, Carol just came out of the loft one day and they were like, oh, okay, it was you.
Well, I still think that the Jodie Jones, whatever, I think I've mentioned this before, with that her boyfriend Luke that was jailed for it or blamed for her death, there's still suspicious circumstances there. It was trial by media, it was basically. I think there's more evidence to point the fact that it was her brother's or her sister's boyfriend that might have done it, because they found his fibers of his like sweater on her and stuff, and he was a creepy weirdo. I think you look more into it, but there's stuff like that as well, like that there's purely like you're saying, the Gump brothers probably would have been arrested and put in jail for that just so that they could arrest someone and solve the
mother.
I don't know how that would fly. I don't know what they're like in Germany these days. I don't know if murders in Germany solved better than in other countries. I have no clue than what it was back then. Obviously, the war was.
I don't know. Either, but at least back then, it does seem like that. You would think that that would be enough evidence to put them away back then, but the fact that they were like, oh well, we've not, like, everything's just circumstantial. Like, yeah, we get he said that he wanted to kill her, but that doesn't mean he is going to kill her. And it's like something that you would say if you found out that the woman that was pretending she was in love with you was actually shagging her neighbour and her dad as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite a reason why you would say I want to fucking kill her. or kill the dad at least. For beating a fucking fritzel.
My favourite weird character in the entire story of weird characters, as you obviously got from me leaving her police statement in because it was entirely irrelevant, as the wee sister that's all like, she didn't even bring a flower to daddy's funeral. Like, nobody asked.
The way you were saying that, I thought maybe that was just the way the German was translated into English. That you were talking that way, but did she actually speak like that? In German, because it's very strange way of talking.
The translation, because when they've translated anything anybody else is saying and anything I've found, and to be fair, that was from the same bit as like some of the quotes from other people. Like, we're all the quotes from Inspector George Reingruber and from Lorenz. Like, where the quotes from them are translated into English and actually put in a way that makes sense, ours is all written. Like, that's clearly the way she actually said it. I just imagined her wearing like a...
I think she's got like a little headscarf on. She looks like a little gypsy woman.
Yeah, like wearing some really floaty number. And they're like, could you tell us whether or not that's true? And she just like wanders to the window and like sticks her hand out reaching for a bird and is like, oh, that was Crescentina. She never brought Father Flowers on the day of his funeral. Like, nobody's asking you that. The fuck you're on about. It's an excellent statement.
Yeah, that's completely irrelevant to what we're trying to get the information out of you.
Like, did your brother tell you he murdered his ex-girlfriend? What are you talking to us about? And even though she didn't bring flowers, not even a stick of flour. A stick of flour?
So what? If she doesn't, maybe she didn't like her weird family, or they're just all weirdos. I feel like the people in that town are all like, it's like something out of the fucking Wicker Man or something. Like, yeah, they're all strange. Like, what?
Even to be fair, yeah, I'm presenting her brother as a normal character and being like, anyone would be annoyed in that situation. His job was going door to door through the whole of Germany saying, do you want to buy one of my famous baskets? He's basically like a fairy tale character.
They all sound, yeah, they sound like something out of Brothers Grimm stories. Before they were censored and made fair, like, for children, because basically Brothers Grimm, which we go back and listen to our podcast episode about Brothers Grimm stories, because... Yeah, they're just as fucked up before they censored them.
They're not really hate them, but she legit hated them because she was like a normal everyday person, and they were like, "I'm weaving my baskets to sell door to door." The other brother played the tambourine, and what's her name? Florentina was like on a basket, just dancing and going, "Come birds, land on me." And Crescentina was like, no, "I'm fucking off."
She sounds like Morticia Adams' sister. It was like that. Like, she was all like the opposite of Morticia. She was like crazy and she was obsessed with flowers and stuff. I can't remember her name. Well, in fact, I'll look it up just now.
I feel like that makes Crescentina Morticia, which makes her an even better character.
Actually, could be.
Crescentina and Florentine as well are very like goth sister, happy sister names, like if you're making up fictional characters again.
Yeah, I mean, just like the family sound like comparatively normal people. It was played by it's Ophelia Shakespearean. Her name's Ophelia. I remember watching an episode of it. It was like during lockdown where it was a YouTube channel and it just played like the same few episodes of the Addams Family over and over again for like 24 hours a day. And that was one of the episodes that came on. So her name's Ophelia Frump because Morticia's maiden name was Frump, funnily enough. So it's quite German.
Now Ophelia I've just Frump. Looked up a picture of Ophelia Frump and she's exactly what I would expect. Yeah, that's what Florentina looks like. That's why she's also like, not even a single stick of flowers because she's covered in fucking flowers. Imagine coming somewhere without even one stick of flower.
Yeah, she's a cheery, happy, and athletic sister of Morticia Adams. She almost once married her brother-in-law, a very reluctant Gomez Adams, when he was promised to marry her in an arranged... That was the episode, yeah, because she was going to marry Gomez, like Ophelia, and Gomez didn't really want to marry her, because he was promised that it was promised by the family that they would marry each other. It was an arranged marriage, which is a tradition in the Adams family. And then she then fell for Cousin It and left Gomez for Morticia. She is very close with her mother, Hester. Oh, is that the granny? Okay. I don't really know much about the granny. I'd like to know what the granny was like. And Granny Adams, Hester Adams, when she was younger.
Yeah, I can see both of them being her daughters because they're both kind of like witchy, but in very opposite ways.
Yeah. Her personality, she's closer to being normal because she likes to cook normal food and is often very cheery and upbeat. However, she is a bit moody and can be quite gloomy when sad. She has powers. She can plant, but she can grow plants on her head. And she can doodle flip people, but they don't like it, leading several men to break up with her because she's too strong. She came across as really nutty on the Addams Family the 60s show that I watched. I recommend you try it. It'll probably be on YouTube.
Apparently, but, she comes to the wedding in the 1991 Addams Family movie.
Well, I never noticed her in that.
She doesn't have a speaking role, but she's played by...
She should be played by the same person who plays Morticia, really.
She's one of the main Mamushka dancers in the Mamushka dancing scene.
Oh.
She's a professional ballerina.
Oh, well. But she is, like, very flighty and kind of nutty. Like that woman.
Florentina.
Yeah, which sounds a lot like it was like if she was Ophelia. Yeah, definitely. Oh, wow. I actually want to read much more. I'm going to look into this myself. Are there any pictures of these people? Like, from the press at the time? Was there any pictures taken?
No, I couldn't find any.
Because I know that sounds weird, but I've got, like, a Pinterest board that's just murder crime scenes. And it's, like, bodies and stuff that have been found, but vintage ones from the 20s and 30s.
Fancy.
Like gangland ones. So if you've got any, send some my way.
I feel like there was there pictures of the farm and the murder scene?
I'll look them up.
Maybe. But obviously I'm me, so I wanted to see pictures of what the people looked like when they were alive, so I could see whether it shagged them or not.
Which
is my main area of interest. Oh no, hold on, how did I miss this?
I don't know why, but I imagine Victoria is, maybe because her name's Victoria, you know, in the 1920s it was all like the flappers and like in Germany's picture in Germany, maybe in Berlin, Weimar, they were all a bit fruity and party central. I'd imagine that Victoria, because she lives in the countryside, to still wear sort of early Victorian clothes. Not early, like, but, you know, like corsets and long skirts and stuff rather than flapper stuff. I think she'd be more, or would she be wearing a sort of more traditional German Frauhaus type outfit?
I'm very confused because I've managed to find the family picture, but not that you can help me with this because I don't know and there's no information. There's like, basically the guy in it can't be the dad because the guy
I don't know who the father is.
No, I mean he can't be like the incestuous
dad. Right. Uh-huh.
I'm trying to remember who he is.
Okay, well send me the picture.
Oh well.
Do it now. Don't know. Okay, well while you're doing that, I'm gonna pick a number. Oh no, we're not.
It's your turn next week.
No, fuck you, Leslie. You're not doing your unsolved murders. All right, so next week I'll do my unsolved murders, which is basically ones that I don't know, maybe just because you never really see a lot of murders from Australia. So I thought I would just look into that. Is that them?
Yeah.
Right, so the wee boy, I'm assuming, is Joseph.
Yes, that's the wee boy. Victoria's holding him.
That's exactly how I envisioned Victoria, wearing that style of outfit.
But, like, absolutely nothing wrong with her, but not a ride. Like, everybody shouldn't be queuing up to shag her.
Well, it's difficult to tell in a black and white image like that. She might have been a ride.
Maybe she was the ride.
Who's that?
The maid is next to Victoria. Okay.
Yeah.
And then Casilla, her outfit, it's given life. Casilla's there. And then I don't understand who this guy is at the side.
He looks weird. He doesn't look right in the head.
No, like, he looks like
he's got really creepy eyes.
He looks like he would gladly kill you.
Do you think
the dead husband is just in the family picture?
Do you think he's just sort of like
photobombed him at the last seconds, and then we've maybe
and then ran back up in the loft.
Yeah, he's there all along. In fact, they even realize he's Andreas,
because if it was Andreas, so if the let's say that Joseph's like one in that picture, that would mean Andreas is 62. That's not a photo of a 62-year-old man.
No, it definitely isn't.
That's a photo of like a 19-year-old.
He might just be a worker. He might just be a labourer in the farm.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's spooky. So how old was Joseph, the wee boy, when he got killed?
2.
So he couldn't... That picture could... I mean, he looks about maybe 1 there.
Yeah.
Close to 2. So that picture would have been taken shortly before they were all killed?
Yeah.
Oh, that's creepy. Where did you find that?
What did I Google that was different from what I Googled last time? I just Googled Hunter Kayfett murder.
Send us a link and then I'll look into it because I don't know how to spell it.
I shall.
All right, cool. Well, listeners, if you want to do your own research and try and solve this murder, call us on 08 and a half, because nobody cares.
Well, 0891 50 50 50.
Yeah, what one's that? Where's that from? Is that from
it's the gay phone sex line that used to be on TV. Why does that not also stick in your memory list?
I thought I never memorized those ones.
I did. I never phoned it, to be fair, but I remember when we were about like 15, 16, 17, if you stayed up late watching anything, you know, like at night the TV would just turn into adverts for shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was just like really buff men lifting weights on a blue background, and it'd be like, do you want to chat to guys? Call 0891 50 50 50.
I just remember some really, really shit dance music. And guys in like stripy pant gym pants, doing some sort of like hip swinging dance thing. Like they were in a really shy 80s club or something. And yeah, it was like the gay exchange. I think it was on late night Channel 4 or something, and they advertised that. I kind of miss those days where you would see those kind of adverts. Now it's just OnlyFans, boo.
Boo.
See in the bio, boring. In fact, I remember my friend, when we were kids, she would phone, not a sex line, but you know, you used to get these chat lines that you would phone, and she phoned them from our landline and spent about 200 quid or something on her mum's phone bill. And obviously she got caught because her mum was like, what the fuck's this, why are you phoning all these chat lines? I don't even remember whatever I spoke to anyone. I think I was just a witness to it, but like, yeah, the two of them would phone the chat lines. I can't remember it was ridiculous how they even got on, because they were literal 10-year-olds speaking to adults on this chat line.
I'm sure they wouldn't care because they'd be getting paid for it, even if
they're just chatting. Well, that's true. They're getting, yeah. Well, right. Well, that's it. It's an hour and a half done. So next week I'll just be going over unsolved murders in Australia. It'll be more than one story because there's quite a few, ranging from early 1900s, I think it was, I said 1902 or 1909, right up until like modern day. Fabulous. Like 2006. And there's probably shitloads, obviously there's shitloads of unsolved murders out there, because there's obviously like people go missing a lot and we don't even know if there's murders yet. That's like if a tree falls in the woods, do you hear saying? Like obviously there's going to be loads of murders that have happened that are unsolved.
Yeah, but we can definitely do not even just next week. I'm sure there'll be, like, we'd be able to go back to this again. There is.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many. I mean, it's not exactly, I suppose it is mysterious. It's more like the myth of what happened to these people, because nobody ever knows. Nobody will know.
No, and I think that's just, I enjoyed the story that I just told you, because I'm like, well, could have been, but then her husband might actually be dead and everyone might, like, there's no way to know, because
sure,
it's so long ago now, as you say, that it's like, well, was he dead? Was he not? If he wasn't, did he kill them, or did the basket boyfriend kill them, or was it just some rando that killed them? Like, was just some random person living in the crawl space? And
it could have just been as boring as that. Might not have been any like interesting explanation. It's like there was a famous case in America of the axe murderer, the axe murdering house, and there was a couple and their child, and then they had their kid had their friend over, like staying over in a sleepover, and this was like early 1900s, and someone went in their house and basically killed them all with an axe. Nobody ever really knows who the culprit was, but the only person who got done for it was a preacher or something, or like a minister, some sort of religious leader, who confessed to the crime. But then he wasn't ever found guilty or anything. So they still don't know to this day who slaughtered that whole family. And they say that he hid in the attic before he did it. Like, he waited in their attic, waited till they were asleep, then went down and killed them all. And you can still see, like, you can go to the axe murder house and you can see where, like, the axe hit the wall. You can see the axe marks in the wall and stuff.
That's fucked up, man. Very much fucked up.
Yeah. So, like, nobody still, like, or a lot of paranormal investigators go to these, like, to this house, and they have, like, EVPs saying that all the preachers here and things like that. But I don't know whether they're getting that because that's the story they've heard, or if it genuinely was the preacher that did it. Or the minister, the priest. Some paranormal
investigators should definitely go to the Interkeyfic Forum, because it...
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to go to Germany. Well, David said he wants to go to Germany now because they've legalised my weed. I was like, I didn't know that. Definitely want to go to Germany again. I'm just fascinated, like, with all the different areas and things, and how different, like, say, well, I suppose because of what happens between the East and West, like, it was divided after the war between East and West, so a lot of it was, like, more Soviet than the other side, like, where Berlin is. I was looking at, like, Freiburg and Dresden, because Dresden was pretty much bombed the shit out of, but they rebuilt a lot of the historical buildings, and it just looks the same as before, but they had to look at, like, paintings from medieval times or the 18th century to try and recreate, because obviously, like, a lot of the plans were bombed, so they didn't have that, so they had to go look at, like, actual paintings of the place before, and just, like, the general history of different parts of Germany is fascinating. So maybe we should do, like, I think we've already done them, like, didn't we do Germany as part of one of our podcasts? See, I don't even remember. We've, like, done that many.
We've done so many now that, yeah. Even when I said to you I was doing this, that was a message to you. I was like, I'm going to do the Interkeyfic Farm Murders because I don't think I've done them before.
Yeah, you definitely haven't. It was really interesting. Anyway, well,
like, we've done so many now that I was like, exactly that. When I decided I was going to do this, I was like, I'm going to do that because I think it's really interesting. And I think Leslie thinks it's interesting too. And then I was like, wait, did I read this and think that you would think it was interesting, or did I do this on a podcast and you told me you thought it was interesting?
No. Well, it's out now. So if you want to go back and listen to our other murder-based podcast, go ahead. Thank you very much for following us, and give us a wee like and subscribe, or we'll come round and I'll come round and try and sell you some gump baskets. There you go. No, seriously, thank you very much for listening. I do apologise for the late episodes. It's just, life gets in the way sometimes, and there's nothing much we can do about it because we have to have, like, day jobs to run this and live our lives. So,
if there's anyone out there who's extraordinarily rich and wants to pay us just to do the podcast,
that would be nice.
Depending on how rich you are, pays to do basically whatever.
Get in contact. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, you can message us there. Just look up Crystal Myth. Or on Threads, but I don't know if anyone actually goes on there anymore. We did try Instagram, but none of us could be bothered updating it. So, whatever. I don't know if anyone wants to help us market this thing, but we're not really here to, like, market shit. We're just here for the love and the laughs and stuff, and just
the mess. It's like, laughing people shagging their dads and then getting
exactly laughing at general incest. On that note, bye.
Bye-bye.